quite an introduction. And I believe I'm certainly going to live up to it. You know, Yitro becomes the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not a simple thing. To get an Edom, a son-in-law like Moshe Rabbeinu, not only a son-in-law like Moshe Rabbeinu, but he's going to work, he's going to take care of your sheep. That's a tremendous accomplishment. What do we know about Yisro? What do we know about him? What? All right, we know he had seven daughters. Is there anything else that we know about Yisro? Huh? He was an advisor to Paro. He had many names. You see that? I'm very happy that I asked the question. He went through all sorts of religions. And you know what I'm interested in? You have all of this information, but I'm interested only in one thing. In last week's Sedra, you don't have this. I'll tell you when to look at your sheets. Moshe saves the daughters of Yisro from the hands of the shepherds. Vatovona, I'm reading from last week's Sedra, Vatovona, they came to Reuel, their father, and he said instinctively, Mador miharten bo hayom, why did you hurry home? How come you came home so quickly? Vatomarna, so they said, Ish mitzri hitzilonu miyad haroim. An Egyptian man saved us from the hands of the shepherds. Vegam dolo dololanu. He also fetched water for us. Not only that, vayashk et hatzon. He gave the sheep to drink. A one-word response. Va'ayo. Where is he? Why did you leave the man out there? Kidenlo, call him, v'yochal lechem, and he'll eat bread with us. Instinctive. What are you talking about? Somebody did something this for you? You don't even show a basic hakaras hatov, gratitude, thank? Ayo! Where is he? Lomar zaften, why did you leave him out there? Call him, and he will eat bread. The next pasuk says, v'yol Moshe lo shevet ha'ta'ish, that Moshe, yes, decided that he was going to stay there. Obviously, they did a great deal more than give him bread. Yitro may have said bread, but he also offered him the opportunity to stay. Here is a man who was fleeing. He most probably finds out now that the man is fleeing from before Paro, so he can find refuge by Yitro. Yes? Vos? Sieben Techter ist kein Gelächter. So. All right. Okay. But there's an idea here. You know what the idea is? All of Sefer Shmos begins with Vayokom Melech Chodosh, a new king arose, Ashalo Yodais Yosef, who didn't know Yosef. Either he didn't know, or he didn't want to know, the man who saved Egypt, the one who gave Egypt the wherewithal to become the most powerful empire of the ancient world. Forgotten. Thanks? Gratitude? What are you talking about? The word doesn't exist in their vocabulary. The entire tragedy of Mitzrayim begins by a terrible act of ungratefulness. We're not asking you to give up everything for them, but at least let them live in peace over here. Paro is an absolute ingrate. The Gemara says that a person who is ungrateful to a fellow human being will ultimately reach the point where he will deny the very existence of God. And that's why in this week's Sedra, Pharaoh says to Moshe, Mi Hashem, who's this God that I have to listen to him? Who is he? I mean, there's a whole metamorphosis that has taken place in the mind of Pharaoh. There was a Pharaoh who once heard from Yosef, I'm not the one who's interpreting your dreams. Elohim, God, the God of the Hebrews, is the one who is interpreting your dream, not me. The lack of gratitude brings profound tragedy upon the Jewish people. Ultimately, what it really means is it brings profound tragedy upon the one who is ungrateful. Yitro is, what are you talking about? I go, where is he? Call him. Now this theme of gratitude or lack of gratitude is continued in this week's Sedra, and we're going to trace it through a number of other places in Torah, and we're going to see the extent to which it is a fundamental principle of life. In this week's Sedra, number one, when it comes to the first of the Makos begins, Dam Tzvardei Akinim, Rashi is going to tell us, because the Pasuk says that Hashem tells to Moshe, tell Aaron to turn the Nile into blood. Tell Aaron to bring the plague of Tzvardea. Kinim, where the earth of Egypt is going to turn into all sorts of swarmy creatures, they were all done by Aaron, not by Moshe. Rashi says, Emor al Aaron, say to Aaron, Lefi shehegen hayor al Moshe, because the river protected Moshe when he was a little boy, kishenishlach letocho, when he was cast into it, lefichach lo loka al yado, therefore the river is not going to be changed through him. He owes the river a debt of gratitude. The river protected him. Lo badam, neither the plague of blood, the lo batzvardim, and not the plague of frogs, the lo kal yedei Aaron, therefore Aaron can do it. Now, of course, what's fascinating about this is, you know, if Moshe would have done it, would the Nile have felt bad? You understand? Would the Nile have felt bad? I mean, the waters of the Nile are inanimate. They have no feelings. They have no feelings. So what does it mean? He can't strike the Nile because he owes the Nile a debt of gratitude. You know what this Maimon Chazal, we're going to see right away the Rashi, the Medrash from which Rashi takes this statement. We're going to see from it the following, and that's going to be the point of this year. Gratitude is not something that is supposed to be of benefit to the one who gave me what he did. Gratitude is a feeling that has to be part of my emotional makeup. It makes no difference who it is or what it is. Gratitude is something that has to be deep within one's neshama. It makes no difference whether the other person is going to feel, not feel. The requirement, the divine requirement of gratitude, yes, for the waters of the Nile. The waters of the Nile. And we're going to see the idea is going to be developed even further. So I went to the Medrash Tanchuma. And here I'm afraid that I'm going to have to make a little digression. As I saw the Medrash upon which Rashi bases this, I couldn't help but catch the few lines before the beginning of the Medrash. And I just want to make a comment on those words, where it's underlined. Esem makos kulon mida keneged mida. The 10 plagues were all measure for measure. Dam. Lama hevi olav dam. Why did he bring upon them the plague of blood? Lefi shelo hayu manichen benot Yisrael litvol mitumatam, because they didn't permit the daughters of Israel to go to the mikveh so that they should be permitted to their husbands. Kedei shelo yiyu parin v'rabin, so that they shouldn't be fruitful and multiply. Just a comment. As soon as I read this, it brought back to me a memory that I happened to be talking to a close friend of mine. I told him this story, and he says, "You never told me all the years." It was very painful for me. But I want to say it anyway, because now I think it's very important. That it's, I learned here in Yeshiva in 55 and 56, and I was a member of Pe'ilim. That was an organization of Yeshiva Bachem that went out to the Ma'barot. There were all sorts of Ma'barot around the country where Olim from all over the world were in temporary dwelling, not karavilot. They were in tents, or very little boxes. Shabbos HaGadol of 1956, I was sent to Dimona. Now, I'll tell you what Dimona was. Dimona was sand dunes. And there were about 100 families living on the sand dunes in little temporary baksalach. How did we go out to Shabbos? There was an office in Tel Aviv. And in the office in Tel Aviv, you picked up a box of matzah, a pishke sardinim, can of sardines. I can't imagine now, you know, I can't eat fish, how I ate sardines in those days. I don't know. Unless I just lived on the matzah, and a bottle of wine. That's how you went out. And I went with two others, and we found this place out in the desert, some rickety old Eged bus. I mean, maybe then it was a new bus, but these rickety things that made a lot of noise. And I came there for Shabbos. It was an unbelievably inspiring Shabbos for us. There was a little tzrif that was used for davening, and 90% of the people couldn't get in Shabbos in the morning, and at Friday night people stood all around, and here were these yeshiva rachum. We spoke, we said divrei Torah, etc. During the course of Shabbos, I find out that they had begun to build a mikveh, and there was a hole there that was being dug, but the Jewish agency functionaries would not permit the building of the mikveh. Yeah. The plan was clear. If we get them to the point that they're not going to keep Taras HaMishpacha, they're going to be Mechal Shabbos in the end. The absolute rishus. It was staggered the mind. So I called Sunday morning, everybody together, we're going to stand around the open pit that's supposed to be the mikveh, and we are going to demonstrate. And we called a major demonstration, and everybody came. We were talking from a Yidden, these religious Jews that came from North Africa, and they're being torn away from Yiddishkeit. It was tragic. It was pitiful. And all of a sudden, I see that there are four or five big guys who are coming toward me, and here it is. I'm standing at the edge of the pit. So I don't know. The Rebbe Yishmael gave me seichel. And Mamish, they're ready to start beating me up, and I pull out a green passport. Do you know that American passports used to be green? I pulled out a green passport, and they all backed off. Ultimately, it was built, but ultimately also, they won and we lost. They tore thousands upon thousands of Chumayidin away from their Chumkeit. That's what they did. That's what they did here in this country. We may not want to admit it, but I think now we have reached a point where we're able to admit it, because we see the rishus. We see what it has produced 60 years later. We see on the one hand what a secular, godless society has created. And on the other hand, we can of course see what a Torah society has created here, both in its Haredi or in its Dati Lumi. Awesome strength. And the moment of truth is going to come between between these two groups, and maybe it's coming already. And maybe the fact is that we're winning the war if they say in fact that 80% of Jews in Eretz Yisrael identify themselves now as either Mesori, Mesorati, or Dati. That means there's something that has happened beneath the surface of this country that we were not aware of. But when I saw this Medrash, instantly, my mind flashed back to Shabbos HaGadol in Dimona in 1956. Absolute wicked to tear Jews away from their Yiddishkeit. So the Makkah came. Parents, I just had to say, I had to get that out of my kishkes. It's the first time, I think. Umipnei ma'loku. The Medrash Tanchuma goes on to say, why were the water and the dust of the earth, why were they struck through Aaron? So it says, Emor el Aaron, tell Aaron, kach matcho, take your step. Amar Rebbe Tanchum, said Rebbe Tanchum, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who says to Moshe, the water that watched over you when you were cast into the river. In the earth that protected you when you killed the Mitzri and you hid him in the earth of Mitzrayim. Not right that you should strike them. Lefichach, lakwa yedei Aaron. Therefore, it happened through Aaron. There's a Medrash Rabba Bamidbar number 3. I'm going to go through it quickly because there's something very significant over here that's going to add to some of our knowledge about the idea of the significance and the importance of gratitude. Zesh Omer Akosuv Ki Atot Toir Neiri. The pasuk says, "You are the one that lights my candle." Amru Yisrael, what does it mean, you're the one who lights my candle? Amru Yisrael, if that Kodesh Baruch Hu, Israel said before the Holy One, blessed be He, Rebbein Yishalelam, Lonu ata omer shenoyel lefanecha, there's a mitzvah in Parshat Balotcha that we should light the menorah. So they say, you want us to light a menorah before you? Atohu oro shalolam. You are the light of the whole world. I mean, you need our little menorah. Light lives with you. You're the source of all light. Pasuk in Daniel, Unahora imei shirei. The light dwells with God. Va'ata omer, and you tell us that we should light the menorah el mul penei ha-menorah. Why do you give us this kind of a mitzvah when you are the light of it all? So the Holy One, blessed be He, said to the Jewish people, I don't need your light. I mean, of course, the mystery is going to be, if God doesn't need our light, why does He want us to light a menorah? Elo, sheto'idu li kederech. I want you to make light before me as I made light before you. And now he will explain. Lama? La'alot etchem b'fnei ha'umot she'yu omrim re'u heich Yisrael me'idin l'mi shehu me'yeh l'chol ha'olam. I want to be able to present you as an example to the nations of all the whole world. Take a look how they make light before the one who made light for them. Heich Yisrael me'idin. You know what the whole act of lighting the menorah is going to be? As they went through the desert, what took them through the desert? There was the Amud Eish, the pillar of fire every night that lit up the way for them. How are they going to express their gratitude to the Rabbeinu Shlomo? By the way, does he need our gratitude? No, you know who needs our gratitude of God? We need it. We have to feel that emotion of gratitude. We have to say Baruch Hashem and mean it. So therefore, what he wants of us is, you know, it's similar to the river. It really doesn't make any difference to the river whether Moshe is going to strike it or Aaron's going to strike it, but it makes a difference to Moshe. He has to know, you know, the river protected me. I'm not the one who can do it. Jews have to know God is the one that provided light for you in that desert. Then you have to show your gratitude. So he says, what can a parable, what is this comparable to? A person who can see and a person who's blind that were going on the road. The one who can see said to the blind man, when we finally get wherever we're going to the house, save had lately a tanerase, light this candle for me in the house, vaho early and make light for me. The one who can see is telling that to the one who is blind. Amalo hasuma, so the blind person said, betovatcha, for your good, meaning, kishahayiti baderech. When we were on the road, you're the one that supported me. You took me by the hand. I couldn't see, and you took me by the hand. Until we got into the house, you accompanied me. So he ends with a question. You are my light. You want me now to light a candle for you when we come into the house? The one who's able to see said to him, that you should not owe me the teva that I accompanied you. That's why I said, you make light for me. I want you to be able to express your gratitude. Even though I don't need it. But you have to feel it. You have to express it. Kach, hapikeach zakodesh baruch hu, the one who can see, that's the Holy One, blessed be He. Shenema, einei Hashem heima mishotet b'chol haaretz, the eyes of God look through the whole world. V'hasuma, the blind one, elu Yisrael, that's Israel. Shenema, negashisha ka'ivrim kia, we hold on to the wall like one who is blind. Hoy hakodesh baruch hu manhigonim eilehem, God is the one who led them and made light for them. Shenem av Hashem holech lefem, God goes before them yomam during the day and then at night with an amudesh. Kivin shomer haMishkan korah kodesh baruch hu leMoshe v'amalo, when they established the Mishkan, God called Moshe and said to him, to'idu li. Shenema, I want you to make light for me. Shenema b'halotcha taneirot, when you bring up the candles, b'shvil la'alot lachem, you know what the purpose of it is? B'halotcha, you'll rise from this. The expression of gratitude is something that's going to make you greater human beings. It's for your good. I don't need your light. I'm Oro Shel Olam. I'm the light of the whole world. But you need it. You need it. There's an idea being expressed here by God. That gratitude is not for the well-being of the benefactor. It is for the beneficiary. The beneficiary's neshama needs it. And we will yet take you a giant step further in explaining the meaning of this. Take a look how far it goes. Let's go to number four. Another medrash. It's medrash day today. Vayashkep tsonam. We talked about number four. You see it on the left-hand side. Moshe gave their sheep to drink. What exactly what Yaakov did for Rachel, that he fetched the water and he gave the sheep, so Moshe did for the daughters of Yitro. And they came to their father Reuel. Why was he called Reuel? He became a friend of God. Reuel, Reya is a friend. V'yahavta l'reyacha kamocha. So he said to them, we learned the psukim. Madua miharten ba, why did you hurry? Mikanat alamed, shekol hayomim ta'achrona hayubot. From this we learn that they were always the last ones home. Like it was so clear to Yitro that something had happened that they're home so early. They would always come late. Vatomerna. So they said, Ish mitzvi hitzilonu miyad haroim. A Hebrew, an Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. V'chi mitzvi haya? Moshe's a mitzvi? V'chi mitzvi haya Moshe? Was Moshe a mitzvi? Elo levusho mitzvi. He was dressed like a mitzvi, but for who ivri? He was a Hebrew. Dovaracher. Listen to this Dovaracher. This Dovaracher is so beautiful. Ish mitzvi. You know what it means when they said Ish mitzvi? Moshel le'echot sh'neshacho ha'arod. It's a muscle, somebody who was bitten by an arod. It's some kind of a wild animal, very dangerous bite. V'hayorotz liten raglov b'mayim. Now it seems there's something that says that if one hurries and gets to water quickly, then it can heal, save his life. So here is this man was running to put his feet into water. Netanan al nahar, he puts his feet into the river. V'ro tinok echot shehu shokei b'mayim. He sees a child who's drowning in the water. V'shalach yado, he stretched out his hand v'hitzilo. He saved the little boy from drowning. Amalo hatinok, the child said, Ilule atak farayiti mate. If not for you, I would already be dead. Amalo, so the man who saved him said, Lo ani hitzalticha. I'm not the one who saved you. Elohaarod sheneshachani, that snake or whatever it was that bit me. Ubarachti himenu, and I fled from him. Who hitzilicha? He's the one who saved you. Kach omru v'nos Yisro, l'moshe. This is what happened. The daughters of Yisro said to Moshe, Yasher kochachashe hitziltanu mi'alachim, shkayach, shkayach, Moshe, you saved us from the shepherds. Amal ha-Moshe, no, I'm not the one who saved you. Where did we have earlier in Parsha Shmos Ish Mitzri? Moshe went out that day and he saw Ish Mitzri, a Hebrew man who was striking a fellow Jew, and he killed the Mitzri. Moshe tells the daughters of Yisrael, I didn't save you. You know who saved you? That Ish Mitzri back there. Because I killed him, I had to flee. And because I had to flee, I came here. And because of that, I was able to save you. You know, it's being... But by the way, you should know that if we begin to think about events or changes or movements in our own lives, there's always a whole series of events that lead up from one thing to the next. I don't know, I can say that somebody who in 1953 talked me into going to Ner Yisrael from Torah V'Das to Ner Yisrael in Baltimore, that's because of him. I ended up in Toronto, I found my wife, I did this, I went there. I'm here in Yerushalayim because that fellow 52 years ago, 53 years ago. You know, in other words, there's a whole series. Everything works in series. It's never just one person alone. The whole series of events leading up one after the other. And in a sense, the Rebbeinu works like this too. We have a responsibility to look back, like, where did the Rebbeinu intervene over here? And as a result of that, I am where I am, or I'm doing what I'm doing. So he said, Oh, Moshe, Oto mitzvi shaharakti, that mitzvi that I killed, who hitzilatchem? Ulekach amru lavi, and that's why they said to their father, Ish mitzvi hitzilonu, you know who saved us? Some Ish Mitzri who's buried there beneath the sand dunes of Mitzrayim, he's the one. Ish mi goram azeh sheyavu etzlein, what caused him to come to us? Ish Mitzri shaharag, because he killed an Egyptian. Dolo dolo, delia achas dolo, v'ish et kol atzon, shahoyu sham in his baruch hamayim, says dolo dolo, he fetched water once, and they saw the water coming up toward him, and in a sense, you know, with that one fetching, he fetched enough water for all the sheep. What the Medrash over here is saying is that there isn't always just the immediate cause of something happening to me. There is a cause behind that, and there's a cause behind the other. Sometimes when we think about it, it becomes very, very fascinating to figure out how one thing led to a next. You meet somebody and he told you about somebody else, and you met to somebody else. Before you know it, you know, all sorts of things are happening and they are all the result. It goes back someplace. And Moshe is saying you should know. More than that, you know what Moshe should say? The Rebbe Mishom wanted me ultimately come here to meet my Zivug. You understand? To meet my Zivug. And maybe that was part of the intent. Of course, I killed the Mitzri because he was going to kill a fellow Jew. I had to do that. But there was something else. The Rebbe Mishom has he runs this world. He runs this world. No question about it. Sometimes we'd like to know how he really runs it. You know, what does he have in mind? That's our problem. What does he have in mind? You read today's headline in the Jewish Post, "Kann ich krank werden, krank werden." I have to wait till tonight to have a Bloody Mary to get over that headline. Yes.
That Rashi did not take this Rashi into consideration when he said that Moshe did not deserve to be buried in that situation because he was called a Jewish Mitzri by Yosef Ward.
Annette is talking, there's another Medrash. There's another Medrash, and you have to know when there's another Medrash, there may very well be differences of opinion between the Medrashim. The Chazal very often say Medrashim Chalukos, they disagree. There's a famous Medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he prayed to God to let him go into Eretz Yisrael, and who was the one that took Yosef's bones out of Mitzrayim and took them for 40 years through the Midbar? It's Moshe. And Moshe says to God, Atzmos Yosef nichnosin la'oretz, the bones of Yosef, v'ani eini nichnas, and I don't go in. So God said to him, it's a difficult Medrash. Don't expect that I'll be able to explain the Medrash. The Medrash says that, listen, when the Sar HaMashkim told the butler, told Paro, that there was somebody in prison who is able to interpret the dream, he says, Nar Ivri, there was a Hebrew boy, a Jew boy was with us in the in prison. And the daughters of Yisro refer to Moshe as Ish Mitzri. A Nar Ivri will be buried in Eretz Yisrael, not an Ish Mitzri. That's the Medrash. Difficult. I can't explain it. So obviously, all right. No way that I can. Too much to say to deal with that. We'll have to leave it for some other time. All right. Medrash 5. Medrash 5, awesome Medrash. B'shosh Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when God said to Moshe, go to Mitzrayim and tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. This is one of the most important missions in all of history. Moshe is sent to take a slave people, his brothers and sisters, out of the oppression and persecution of Mitzrayim. V'ato, L'chovesh l'chachol Paro, God says to Moshe, now I will send you to Paro. Omalo, you know what Moshe's response was? Ribein ha'ilamim, eini yachol, I can't go. Why can't I go? Mipnei shekiblani Yitro, Yitro accepted me, upatach li beito, and he opened his house to me, v'ani imo keben, and I'm like a son with him. Umishu poteach pitcho lechavero, and one who opens a door for his friend, nafsho chayiv lo, I owe everything to him. I can't leave. I can't go without Yitro's permission. I can't. Do you understand? Here is a command of God. God himself commands. I mean, all that Moshe should have said, listen, you know, I can't be misachayiv pekuda. I can't refuse God's orders. God's order comes above everything. But no, he says, no, I can't go without Yitro's permission. I can't go. V'chein ato motze be'eliyo, b'sho'a sho'olach etzel, Sarfit Ha'almana, Maid Bina Hitchel Mitzchanim V'yome. So he, Eliyahu complained to God that, listen, here is this woman who opened up her house to me. You can't kill her son. I owe everything to this woman. Let's go into the next medrash. The next medrash is going to be the completion of number 6. Is going to be the completion of number 5. In Tilim it says that one of the things about a pious person is v'lo nishbal mirma. Capital 15, one who does not swear falsely. Zeh Moshe. That refers to Moshe. Kishaholach etzel Yitro, when he went to Yitro, nishbalo shelo yelech chutz midato, he swore to him that he was not going to leave without his permission. Ukishaholach b'shlichu shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, holach etzel Yitro. When he was supposed to go and do God's bidding, he went to Yitro, v'hitir shuaso, and Yitro gave him permission, and he annulled the vow, and that's why it says, after God tells Moshe, go to Mitzrayim, by Yosef he returned El Yeter Chotno to his father-in-law. What did he go back to his father-in-law for? He doesn't go without his father-in-law's permission. He owes his life to Yitro. Can't do it. Menschlichkeit, HaKoras HaTov, comes before everything. Medrash number 8. Why did I skip 7? I don't know, I felt like skipping 7, you know. Ein mugdim u'mu'uchar bashir, you know. It may very well be because I went to number 8, because number 8 is the first... is one of the first instances of true gratitude expressed in Torah, and it's fascinating. Vayishma Ruvain vayatzileu. Ruvain heard what the brothers wanted to do to Yosef, and he saved him. Where was he? The Medrash says, Heichon Hoyo, where was Ruvain? Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Nechemya, Rabbono, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi Yoma, Kol Echad Ve'echad Mehem, Hoyo Meshamesh Esoviv Yomo. Each one of the brothers would serve his father for a day. It was Reuven's day. Therefore, he wasn't there when all of this was taking place. I'm the firstborn, and if anything happens to that boy, they're going to blame me. I'm the ranking member of this family. It's all going to be. Rabbanan Amri, the Rabbanan say, Omar Reuven, listen to this. Hu mone oti imachai ve'eni matzilo. He counts me together with my brothers, and I'm not going to save him. If the Reuven had moved the bed of his father out of the tent of Rachel into the tent of his mother Leah, that was an act for which ultimately Yaakov is going to condemn him, Pachas Kamayim Al Totar. And he thought that as a result of that hasty act, in a sense in respect for his mother, that he was condemned not to be part of the family. And he thought that there's the whole family, and there's an outsider now. Reuven the Bechor is the outsider. He did a terrible thing, and because of that, he's no longer one of the children of Yaakov. And then he hears the dream of Yosef. Yosef has a dream. 11 stars bow down to me. There's 11 only if I'm included. He says, you know what Reuven got from the dream of Yosef? I'm one of the family. I'm one of the family. Look at the words. Omar Reuven, hu mone oti imachai. He counts me together with my brothers, ve'eni matzilo, and I'm not going to save him. Ani hayiti savur, I thought, shenidachti mikorach oto ma'aseh. I thought that because of what I had done, I had been rejected from the family. and he, and he counts me with my brothers, as it says in the dream of Yosef, there are 11 stars, 11 stars are bowing down to me, I'm one of them. In other words, who gave me the message? Who sent that important piece of information to me that I'm part of the family and have not been rejected? And I'm not going to save him. The Holy One, blessed be He, said to Reuven, you're the one who was the first one to begin with the mitzvah of saving lives. You saved Yosef's life. I swear, the first city of refuge that will be set aside in Eretz Yisrael is going to be from the land of Reuven, as it says, as Betzer Bamidbar. Now, we've taken a major step forward over here. Yosef never had any intention whatsoever of doing anything for Reuven. He's relating a dream that he had. He has absolutely no idea in the world how it's going to be heard by Reuven. He has absolutely no idea the impact his words are going to have. Does he mean anything? If you'd ask him, hey, you want to make Reuven feel good? What do you make Reuven? I don't know what you're talking about. What's clear over here is it has absolutely nothing to do with the benefactor. Gratitude and thankfulness is completely rooted within the beneficiary, not in the benefactor. It's me. And if it's me, even if that somebody had absolutely no intention whatsoever to do something for me, but I benefited, I have to feel it. Just like the waters of the river, just like the Tzvardim, just like a Rabbeinu Shem who doesn't need our candles. Maybe to go a little step further, I want to read a few choice sentences from an essay, a shir by Rav Soloveitchik. Shir by Rav Soloveitchik. I can tell you in one word what he's going to say in more than one word, and in some beautiful, beautiful language. There is no human being in the world who is an I alone. We are all dependent on so many people around us. We're not self-made men. Nobody's self-made men. Where was it? Somebody sent us on the internet a whole bunch of sharp vetter, like Lady Esther tells Churchill, if you're my husband, I'd give you poison. And he said, and if you were my wife, I'd take it. So one of the vetter over there was, he's a self-made man, and he worships his creator. All right, I'll do it once more. He's a self-made man, and he worships his creator. The Rav says there are no self-made men. Everybody is an I only by virtue of the thou. Parents are the thous, the others. We get everything that we ultimately are, we get from those around us. Those who raised us, those who educated us, those who taught us, those who assisted us, those who helped. There are no self-made men. Every I has a thou. Every I has a thou. The awareness, just a few sentences, the awareness of grateful indebtedness is the very core of religious and moral thinking and feeling. The awareness of grateful indebtedness is the very core of religious and moral thinking and feeling. Acknowledgement of an act of kindness and the grateful acknowledgement of its beneficial impact on our lives lies at the very root of every religious and moral act. I think the first thing that I said when the shir began is, there's a Maimon Chazal that says, the one who is ungrateful will ultimately reject God as well. The person who is an I man or a me man has no place in his life for anybody else. And if he has no place in his life for anybody else, then there's no place truly for God as well. Whatever the Chovah is going to say over here, Chazal, and we can read some more, Chazal say that a person who is a Balgaiva, who is conceited, he pushes the feet of the Divine Presence. We can't live together in one world, because the fact is that the one who sees himself as the end-all and the be-all of the whole world, everything revolves around him, there's no place for anybody else in that world of his. He is an I, recognizes no thous, and if there are no thous, then there's no God as well. He can reject God as well. Thus, Kivud Av Ve'Ein, the Rav says, is placed in a new dimension, namely that of gratitude, the experience of existential solidarity with which we are bound together and from which it is impossible to drift away. A person who has gratitude, the child who is indebted to his parents out of grateful appreciation for everything that they have done for him, feels that his relationship to them is an indestructible fact, and he belongs to them and cannot break away from them. If he did attain some success in life, the achievement is mostly due to the sacrifices and loving care of his parents. Hakarat HaTov, the Rav says, gratitude signifies not only the duty of repaying a favor received. You did something for me, now I'm going to do something for you. In all of the cases that we spoke about, in all the Madrashim that we learned today, there was no one case in which I repaid. Gratitude was where I repaid somebody for something that did. I light the menorah. I'm not repaying God. I mean, well, he needs my light. I'm not repaying the river. Nobody's repaying anything. The only thing that can come close to it is Vayishmar Ruvein Vayatzileu Miyodam. But that's not the essence of gratitude. It's not. We emphasize that Hakorat HaTov, gratitude signifies not only the duty of repaying a favor received, but an act of recognition, a value judgment, a feeling of being indebted, and a sense of obligation as well. But it's rooted in me. It's not rooted in the other person. Gratitude doesn't mean like one hand washes the other. You know, you do for me, you'll need a little protection, I'll do for you, you do for me. That's not gratitude. That, in no way is that gratitude. Because it means that whatever I'm doing for you, I really did for me. I'm not doing it for your benefit. I'm doing it because there will ultimately be benefit that's going to accrue to me. The self is not the exclusive property of the person himself. I don't belong to me. Don't Chazal say that there are three partners in the creation of man? Father, mother, and God. The self is not the exclusive property of the person himself. The benefactor, the one who did me the teva, contributed to the development of myself, my talents, abilities, skills, possibly more than I myself. The people who did for me may have done a great deal more for me than I did for myself. Participating so prominently in the formation of the I, the benefactor acquired a part of the I. Part of I, part of me, belongs to so many other people. I mean, the tragedy of the last, most probably 20, 30 years, the idea of the me generation, I'm going to do what's good for me, I'm going to fulfill myself, who cares what happens to anybody else around me. That's the antithesis of Torah. This particular, now I'm going to use the word, you know, I think it was William Faulkner who said about Ernest Hemingway, He never sent me to the dictionary. Hemingway never sent me to the dictionary. The Rav sends me to the dictionary. This whole chapter is talking about the ontic or antic relationship. O-N-T-I-C. Fog mechagang. I googled ontic already. I looked it up. It's the idea that being or reality freglished, but I never came across the word until I read the Rav, you understand? The Rav sends me to the dictionary, and he sends me a lot of other places too. He says this particular ontic partnership of, in other words, my essence, my whole being, which resulted in the inclusion of the other, father, mother, wife, whoever, ready, teacher, which resulted in the inclusion of the other in my ontic awareness, it may be antic, the machlek is how to pronounce it, brings us to a second point, namely, that no action, inward or external, should be exclusively I-directed. Anything I do has to take into consideration other people. There's no such thing as doing something that's I, me. Any concern with oneself points at the same time towards the other. I free myself, and here is another Maimah Chazal that we talked about, but the Rav is not referring to the Chazal. He says, the person who has gratitude frees himself from an egocentric and greatly exaggerated erratic anxiety about himself, and he begins to care. Caring about others is a sane and good experience. This feeling of gratitude talks about myself as related to the other. Desires, hopes, regard, and love are not self-centered anymore. It's not me, me. The focus isn't on me alone. They are communally directed to where I and the other find ourselves communing. One other sentence. True gratitude means an existence turned outwards. An acceptance of responsibilities for and gracious giving to the other. An awareness that wherever I am, the other trails behind me like an everlasting shadow. I'm part of a people. I'm part of a family. I'm part of a culture. I'm part of a country. I'm part of a society. And whatever I do, there's that shadow with me. And if I have gratitude, and I understand the meaning of Hakaras HaTov, it means that whatever I do is not something that is centered in me and in me alone. By the way, or maybe more than by the way, that's Kol HaTorah Kula. One can only have a relationship with Rabbeinu Shel Olam, which is, of course, finally what Torah and Yahadut is all about, a relationship with Rabbeinu Shel Olam, a relationship with Klal Yisrael, that can only happen if a person has reached the point where he understands what true gratitude is, meaning that he is an I who is completely inextricably intertwined with all the vows around him. And therefore, Yisro, instinctive, Vayo, where is he? What do you mean? Somebody saved you. Where is he? There's a significant vow in your lives right now. You can't just leave him out there. He's become part of you. He saved you. Reuven, you know, I can imagine the whole family is listening to the dream of Yosef. It says over there the brothers were jealous of him. The brothers hated him. Can you imagine now? They're all, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that the brothers are all frowning, fuming, angry. And maybe they take a look at Reuven. Reuven is smiling. He's ready to burst out into joy. Because he counted me, I'm one of the brothers. Achad asar kochavim mishtachavim li. I see 11 stars that are bowing down unto me. What an awesome feeling. For Reuven, it's a whole different story. Vani eini matzilo. I'm not going to save him. why is it that God doesn't get upset with Moshe, that when Moshe says, listen, I know you commanded me that I should go to Mitzrayim, but I have to talk to Yisro about this. I can't, eventually should say, what are you talking about, Yisro? Who's more important, me or Yisro? No, because the Rebbein Shem understands that any relationship with him and any relationship of Moshe Rabbeinu with Klal Yisrael is always, it's going to be predicated on Hakaras HaTov, on great gratitude, on being thankful. And therefore, do you know what Hakaras Baruch Hu encourages him? You're right, Moshe. He took you into his house. That's exactly what you should do. You go speak to him. Because it's not only the relationship with God, every human relationship is based on the idea of Hakaras HaTov. And all the tragedy, I don't know why late last night, do I always do things late last night or early in the morning? So I went back to read again the last chapter of a book that I had mentioned some while ago, The Pity of It All. The Pity of It All, by Amos Elon. It's the story of 200 years of German Jewry until the rise of Hitler. The last chapter is talking about, it's called The End, and it talks about the post-First World War period. If there was art, if there was science, if there was literature, by the German people, it was Jews. The debt the German people owed to Jews, enormous. Enormous. And they turned around against that Jewish people and attempted to destroy them utterly. The pity of it all. The pity that he's talking about is Jews didn't realize it. He lists a few great Jewish minds in 1925, 26 who converted to Catholicism in order that they should make their way into German society. And the end is Vayakom Melech Chodosh Ashalo Yodas Yosef. Gratitude. What are you talking? Gratitude? A total rejection. On the contrary, most probably the more they felt beholden to the Jewish people, the more they wanted to destroy them, because they didn't want to feel gratitude. And if you don't want to feel gratitude, you know what you do? You destroy the benefactor. They wanted to destroy the benefactor. And Jews didn't see it. They didn't realize it. Just a few over there. Everybody was trying to make their way into German society. By Yaakov Melech Chodosh, a rejection of basic gratitude. By the way, there are a lot of parallels of that within our society here, but I'm not going to get into that. You understand? There's a tremendous amount of gratitude that this country. All right. The important thing is that the fundamental principle that underlies all of Torah and every relationship whatsoever, is that every relationship is an I and thou relationship. It is never an I relationship alone. An I relationship alone destroys the I and the thou. An I and thou relationship is the healthy one. It's the sane one. That we're all interdependent. We all need one another. We all give to one another. And therefore we all owe a sense of gratitude to one another. As I was saying, the last time I read Buber was 50 years ago. Since then, I found out more about Buber, and last night I read about him too.
Yeah,
he was a—he was bad news. He was very bad news. He was one of the those who established the Brit Shalom, those who wanted to turn this. He was opposed to the establishment of the State of Israel. He wanted a dual nationality state. You know, all of that stuff. I was reading about him last night, but I tell you, I read the last time I read I and Thou in Buber. It was 50 years ago. I can't imagine that it's the same I and Thou that the Rav. The Rav is the Gaon of Torah, you understand? Kol HaTorah. Yes, same phraseology.